further, doesn't it, to where the tortoise is now. Meanwhile, the tortoise has moved on, not much, I'll grant you, but it doesn't have to be much. Am I right? So the arrow has a bit further to go. But the point is that by the time it gets to where the tortoise is now, the tortoise isn't there. So if the tortoise keeps moving, the arrow will never hit it. It'll keep getting closer and closer, but never hit it. Q.E.D.
Are you right? Said Tepic automatically.
No, said Ibid coldly. There's a dozen tortoise kebabs to prove him wrong. The trouble with my friend here is that he doesn't know the difference between a postulate and a metaphor of human existence, or a hole in the ground.
It didn't hit it yesterday, snapped Zeno.
Yes, I was watching. You hardly pulled the string back. I saw you, said Ibid.
They started to argue again. Tepic stared into his wine mug. These men are philosophers, he thought. They had told him so. So their brains must be so big that they have room for ideas that no one else would consider for 5 seconds. On the way to the tavern, Zeno had explained to him, for example, why it was logically impossible to fall out of a tree. Tepic had described the vanishing of the kingdom, but he hadn't revealed his position in it. He hadn't a lot of experience of these matters, but he had a very clear feeling that kings who hadn't got a kingdom anymore were not likely to be very popular in neighbouring countries. There had been one or two like that in Ankh-Morpork, deposed royalty, who had fled their suddenly dangerous kingdoms for Ankh's hospitable bosom, carrying nothing but the clothes they stood up in, and a few wagon loads of jewels. The city, of course, welcomed anyone, regardless of race, colour, class or creed, who had spending money in incredible amounts. But nevertheless, the inhumation of surplus monarchs was a regular source of work for the Assassin's Guild. There was always someone back home who wanted to be certain that deposed monarchs stayed that way. It was usually a case of air today, gone tomorrow.
I think it got caught up in geometry, he said hopefully. I heard you were very good at geometry here, he added, and perhaps you could tell me how to get back.
Geometry is not my forte, said Ibid, as you probably know.
Sorry?
Haven't you read my Principles of Ideal Government?
I'm afraid not.
Or my Discourse on Historical Inevitability?
No.
Ibid looked crestfallen.
Oh, he said. Ibid is a well-known authority on everything, said Zeno, except for geometry and interior decorating and elementary logic.
Ibid glared at him.
What about you, then? Said Tepic.
Zeno drained his mug.
I'm more into the destruct testing of axioms, he said. The chap you need is Pythagonal. A very acute man with an angle.
He was interrupted by the clatter of hooves. Several horsemen galloped with reckless speed past the tavern and on up the winding cobbled streets of the city. They seemed very excited about something. Ibid picked a stunned seagull out of his wine cup and laid it on the table. He was looking thoughtful.
If the old kingdom has really disappeared, he said.
It has, said Tepic firmly. It's not something you can be mistaken about, really.
Then that means our border is concurrent with that of Tussaut, said Ibid ponderously.
Pardon? Said Tepic.
There's nothing between us, explained the philosopher. Oh dear, that means we shall be forced to make war.
Why?
Ibid opened his mouth, stopped, and turned to Zeno.
Why does it mean we'll be forced to make war?
He said.
Historical imperative, said Zeno.
Ah, yes, I knew it was something like that. I'm afraid it is inevitable. It's a shame, but there you are.
There was another clatter as another party of horsemen rounded the corner, heading downhill this time. They wore the high plumed helmets of Ephebian soldiery and were shouting enthusiastically. Ibid settled himself more comfortably on the bench and folded his hands.
"That'll be the tyrant's men," he said, as the troop galloped through the city gates and out onto the desert. "He's sending them to check. You may depend upon it."
Tepic knew about the enmity between Ephib and Tussaut, of course. The old kingdom had profited mightily by it, by seeing that the merchants of both sides had somewhere discreet in which to trade with one another. He drummed his fingers on the table.
You haven't fought each other for thousands of years, he said. You were tiny countries in those days. It was just a scrap. Now you're huge. People could get hurt. Doesn't that worry you?
It's a matter of pride, said Ibid, but his voice was tinged with uncertainty. I don't think